Welcome to Investigating Angel, an Angel rewatch podcast where we analyze each episode of Angel the series with no spoilers. We are your hosts, Leia
and Sarah,
and if you love Angel, this is the podcast for you.
Everybody, welcome back to Investigating Angel. Today we are talking about season one, episode four, I Fall to Pieces. Whew, okay, so this is something we were talking about before, before the podcast started. And I have a lot to say about the episode and like my feelings about it, but like I just have to get this out of the way. It's really hard when you first start a show. The first half of the season, I feel like, is it finding its way? And as people who have seen the show in its entirety multiple times now, or in my case, twice, it's so hard to be patient and be like, okay, they're building. We got to like go episode to episode when you know so much good stuff is coming, even just later on in this season. And so I get to episodes like this and I'm like, whew. Okay, Sarah.
Yeah.
It's important. It's here for a reason. Let's talk about it. So if that didn't scare you all away, welcome to this episode.
No. This is a repeat of Lonely Heart.
Oh, kinda. No, it's not. Don't say that. But yes.
But without kind of. The connections.
Oh, Lord. No, we are done. We're done talking about that. Oh, I will say, simply because we don't have to have the metaphor hit over our heads. And yeah, I felt like with Lonely
Does
Heart,
this one even have just, a metaphor? What's the metaphor in this one?
Kind of.
Okay. I'll let you explain it because I didn't get it.
Yeah, I think it has kind of a metaphor, but I honestly think – so this is why I think this episode is better than Lonely Heart. I think that this episode is far more character-driven, and it delves a little bit more into Angel than Lonely Heart did. Lonely Heart was – I mean, it did talk about Angel's loneliness, but that was just a repeat of the pilot. This episode, I think it talks about taking back your power. But I also think it really addresses where Angel is at in his redemption story. And I'll cover that more later on once we like get to specific instances. But I think this episode, what's missing, and I think knowing where they were trying to go with the season makes this episode make a lot more sense. I think it would have fit very well in the rest of the season if they had continued with the focus being on Angel's bloodlust, because there's some very interesting parallels between Angel here and then Angelus in season two, specifically of Buffy. So right. I think when they were like, oh yeah, we're going to go with like the bloodlust metaphor, I think this episode kind of fit perfectly into that. But as we all know, it kind of deviates from that a couple episodes. And so I think that this episode really, other than the fact that you kind of just see a little bit more of meshing between Doyle and Cordelia, Doyle and Angel, Angel and Cordelia, other than those dynamics, this episode doesn't really affect the characters moving forward. And that's why I feel like it's just not really as good as it could be. You know, how do you feel about this, Leia?
Yeah, I guess I kind of agree that the most that it does is kind of show you how the like the core three, so Angel, Doyle, and Cordelia, are like kind of working together and meshing together. I think it kind of also establishes more like Angel investigations more with like the charging people. I feel like they really focused on that like so much this episode. I think just to like hit us over the head with the fact that, oh, they're going to be charging people now, which I don't know why they have to, but
Cordelia needs nice things.
Yeah, I feel like in that respect, like there were some really good moments between the three of them with like so much chemistry, like really fun dialogue. But I feel like just the general like idea of the episode, like I kind of see what you mean with the Angelus parallels, but it's like, what does it do for the overall like story? I can't really put my finger on it, to be honest, other than those few things. Which are, I mean, those are important things, but I don't know.
Yeah, and we'll talk about it more later, but like Passion of the Nerd brought up a really good point when he was like, the whole parallels with Angelus, he's like, they've been done before. Like, he brought up specifically Passion, you know, with Angel, like the stalking, and we'll talk about it, Angelus mm-hmm. stalking Buffy. It's very similar to what Ronald is doing to Melissa in this episode. But he's like, Ronald and Melissa aren't very well fleshed out characters, so they work more as caricatures and more as symbols. And so he's like, because of that, this episode, you're like, we're supposed to be informed about Angel, not these characters necessarily, but we already knew this about Angel, and you're kind of mm-hmm. just reinforcing ideas that we've seen before. So yeah, I was actually very, very surprised because this episode is written by Joss Whedon and David Greenwalt, like the two showrunners of both Buffy and Angel. So it's very interesting to me because normally Joss picks like really meaty episodes and you can always tell which episodes he's written because they just stick out. But this one, I was very surprised. I was looking like, okay, maybe it is Douglas Petrie or Marty Noxon. No, it's Joss Whedon, which is very odd.
That's really interesting because I wonder if there's like behind the scenes, like quotes from either of them kind of explaining why this episode is the way it is.
Yeah, I don't know. And later on, there is references back to this episode by another character. And the inference is that the episode is not great. So like the character kind of makes this comment about how like, oh yeah, that wasn't a good one or whatever about the woman that he was saving or something like that. And so the idea is like, I think even the writers realized that this was kind of a miss.
There's not even a copy of the script for this. They just wanted it erased from like existence.
To me, it isn't super surprising that it's kind of a miss simply because, I mean, let's look at like all the stuff that's going on behind the scenes that we've just talked about, and then all the behind the scenes stuff that we're going to talk about later that happens with this first season. The fact that they had to completely change directions and tone, the fact that there was just a lot of drama going on behind the scenes, they were having issues with a couple of their actors. Like, there's just things that are happening. And so it's no surprise that scripts are being written a little bit hastily, that they are even kind of doing 180 turns with the direction that they want the show and the characters to go. So I feel like this episode is just kind of a product of the show not really being certain where it's headed at this mm-hmm. point. Yeah. And they kind of just centered it around, we definitely know that they want to be a business. We know they want to be paid. So we're just going to kind of hammer that home. And I think that's why that just keeps getting addressed more than anything else in this episode. All right. So this episode is directed by Vern Gillum. And it aired October 26, 1999. The title of this episode shares its name with the Patsy Cline song, I Fall to Pieces, which ironically was the song Xander listened to in Prophecy Girl when Buffy rejected him. Do you remember that? He's laying on his bed.
Oh,
he talks about
yes.
country music, the music of pain. And then like,
so Will are we saying that Ronald is Xander? In
this? No. Are we?
I got Ted vibes.
Yeah, no. I didn't very get Xander vibes. Yeah. Yeah, no. But I did think it was kind of funny because, I mean, not that it's all about Xander. He'd like it to be all about him, wouldn't he?
Yeah.
But I thought it was funny because, like, at the very end of the episode, you have Cordelia and Doyle in the basement taping everything up. And the last time Cordelia was in a basement getting taped in was when her and Xander kissed for the first time. And we're getting major, like, Cordelia Doyle vibes. Like, there's like,
and also the it was when that worm guy was deconstructing himself into little worms.
Yeah
he was also falling to pieces.
Oh, very nice. It's all coming full circle in my Kronk voice. Oh yeah, it's all coming together. Oh, you haven't seen Emperor's New Groove. Oh my gosh.
No.
One of these days, Leia, you're going to get my reference.
Seen anything. I'm never going to get any of your references because I've never seen anything except Buffy and Angel.
Oh man. Someone out there is like, I got that reference. Thank you. Thank you, random citizen. Hopefully you got that reference too. Not me referencing all these kid movies. Anyways.
I didn't grow up here.
You didn't grow up here. That's true. I know.
I kind of did, but that's okay.
All right. So we're back to the mysterious slash ominous detective music, which was very different from the In the Dark music, which felt very Buffy-esque. And we have the quick flashes, which I don't know if I mentioned this here, but I did mention this over on Becoming Buffy. Both the music and like the quick flashes, you know what I'm talking about? Like when he's quickly like they're jumping to the next scene and they gives you like these headache inducing. Yeah. I think they are definitely David Greenwalt's touch slash idea, because the episode that he wrote, like that he mainly was in charge of overseeing on Buffy, was Homecoming. And they had those exact flashes there. And I, when I looked up who wrote it, I was like, aha, that makes a lot of sense. So he likes them. I think
they did mention something about that in the commentary for the pilot. And they said that the quick flashes were actually something they had in like the promo video that they had somebody make. It was the person who made that promo video used a lot of quick flashes and they liked it a lot. So they decided they wanted to use it in the episodes. But also, yeah, like probably David Greenwalt really liked it too.
He was like watching. He was like, oh, yeah, that's a good idea. Let's do that one.
Like Greenwalt, my eyes hurt.
I know, right? I feel like Doyle right now.
Flash warning.
Okay, so Cordelia's walking to the office carrying the mail, and she's like, gosh, we have all these bills. And Doyle's like, whatever. And I thought it was really interesting that he's shuffling cards in his hand. And I think you mentioned last episode how you feel like they've been kind of emphasizing Doyle's gambling slash money problem. And I love that they gave him these cards because you know they're trying to cut like subtly plant these seeds as we go along. And I thought that was a good like visual cue and reminder that they're still building off of that, you know? So Doyle's like, well, we just need the income to pay for, you know, all the stuff that's going on around here. And Cordelia's like, yes, exactly. This is a business. We should be running it like one. We should be charging. And then she's like, you know, we need to talk to Angel about this.
Okay. Can I just say something?
No. Yeah, you can. Please do. Are we going to like what you have to say?
No, it's just like a question. So it's just something to think about. Mm-hmm. How was Angel living in this building over the summer, however many months? So we find out in this episode that it has been 1 month since they started working together. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How has been Angel living in this basement apartment? And obviously, like, he's got access to the office up there. And he has electricity and he has all of these things. How was he doing it before? And why is it necessary now to pay all of these bills? Like, you know, it's just, yeah. I don't know.
That is a very good question. I would like to know this too. Maybe he's selling his feet pictures.
On OnlyFans?
Yeah. He has gotten really good at doing the computer lately.
I'm just saying, I feel like Angel doesn't need the money because he's literally 200 and whatever years old and he's managed to live in an apartment in Sunnydale, a big ass mansion in Sunnydale, and now this place. And like he's somehow managed to pay for all of these places. I don't know.
So I think the mansion. The mansion made sense because it was like abandoned. And I never, that I can remember, I don't remember seeing a lamp or any light on. I only saw the fireplace and candles. So maybe he just didn't use electricity while he was there. I mean, he did talk to, okay, we're going to talk about this in a minute. He did offer Joyce, I think, coffee when she came in the prom. And then like somebody asked him if he wanted coffee. He says, no, it makes him jittery. But then he drinks coffee in this episode. There's a lot of questions.
Like, I have a lot of questions. What are you doing, Angel?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then, okay, so then my other thing is maybe the office space wasn't originally part of the deal. Like maybe over the summer he just lived in the basement space and the office space was something they decided to rent out once they decided to start Angel Investigations.
Yeah, maybe he was like living there like without anyone knowing, but I don't think so because that place was like decked out. Anyway, I guess they now need to like make money because they're a business and they have to be legit. Like, I feel like that's the only explanation. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. And Cordelia's talking about how she needs certain designer things, which I'm like, Cordelia, girlfriend, we've seen your apartment. You need food. You need food.
Cordelia, don't bring designer stuff into your apartment, please. There's nowhere to put them.
No, there isn't. Like, do you have a bed?
I think that's the only thing she does have is a bed.
Doyle agrees with her. He's like, yes, I agree. Angel should be charging. He just hates bring up finances because he likes to play the hero and, you know, walking off and all this other stuff. And I'm like, I think that's an oversimplification. I think Angel does like saving people, but he also feels bad because these are people in need.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's just kind of like bizarre to me. Like, you're going to like help somebody, like save someone, because at this point, the only people they're saving are people that Doyle sees in his visions. So it's like, are you really going to, like, the end of this episode when Angel, like, awkwardly asks her and she was like, oh, no, you earned it. But it's like, I don't know. It's just weird to be asking people for money for, like, saving them. Like, that's literally your job.
Yeah. So I'm not against charging people, but I think that they shouldn't charge people that the powers to be or powers to be send them to save. I think that they're offering their services to these people without the people asking for them. And then the people are like, oh, thanks for offering. Yeah, sure. Okay. And then they spring it on them and say, oh, hey, we're going to charge you. I think they should charge people that come to them knowing they are business and a service.
Like, if any of those people from Dope Leak that Cordelia was like a walking advertisement for, like handing out whatever cards and like letting them know, like, that's great. Like, if any of those people call and they need help with, you know, private investigation, sure, give them, charge them a rate, whatever. But it's just, it just, it's weird. And I know that that's not, I mean, I think they mentioned that in City of, like, of course you're not going to charge the people that, like, but then they did charge this woman that they found through a vision. Like, why?
Well, and I think on a more heavy note, I think Angel is trying to, he wants forgiveness, right? That's the big theme of the last episode. He wants forgiveness. Can he, in good faith, charge people when he knows that this is also earning him, I say in quotations, forgiveness or redemption, or possibly earning him that? So it's like, is that truly an altruistic, unselfish act motivation if you're charging, even if it is just so that you can pay your bills? Do you know what I mean? So I do understand where Angel's coming from 100%. I do want to point out before we move on that Cordelia is once again wearing that burnt orange color again that I talked about in the last episode. It's more accented. It's a little darker in the skirt especially, but it's there. And it also contrasts really nicely with Doyle's blue and Angel's black. So again, you have like the opposite color sides of the spectrum. And I've noticed, again, they put Doyle in a lot of blues and they give him like this brown leather jacket to kind of contrast Angel's. But it also kind of ties in really nicely with Cordelia. Like, I noticed Doyle and Cordelia's outfits often like really complement each other or even match. So it's just kind of interesting.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Yep. So Angel walks in. They're not awkward with him at all. They're like, morning. Angel pours himself coffee and drinks it. And I was like, wait, have we ever seen Angel drink anything other than blood? What is this? Which is also what Angel says. What is this? Cordelia's like, that's last week's coffee. And I was like,
oh my God.
Okay. I know that they probably can't afford, but I also feel like Cordelia's intentionally leaving last week's coffee and to like double down on the we need money. Like, that's the vibe that
coffee's
I was getting.
Cheap. There's literally no excuse. You can get like what's that one brand called? Maxwell House for like $2.99 at the store.
Yeah, it's not.
You guys can afford coffee.
This is also 1999. Like, inflation hasn't happened either. Yeah, it was
probably like a dollar back then.
So then Doyle and Cordelia are just like sweet talking him. And then Angel's like, no, I'm not charging people for money. Like, I'm not comfortable about it. And so my question is, do you think Angel overheard them or do you think he just knows them way too well?
I think he overheard them for sure. I mean, we know he has like super powered hearing.
I think so, too. I wonder how much he overhears and then just, like, passes it off as if he didn't hear anything.
I feel like Angel hears a lot of things, and it's Angelus that mentions them. Angel hears everything, but he will never say it.
Right.
Because he doesn't want to, like, embarrass people or, like, hurt people's feelings or, like, but if he was Angelus, he would use that against them.
Oh, 100%. Yes.
So.
That's hilarious. And then Doyle has a flash of a vision. And this one is a little more specific than the Dope Leak one. He actually has a name and he tells him directly where to go, which I was like, thank you. The last one was a little confusing. And then we have this moment, this epic slow motion moment of Angel putting on his jacket and like walking out the door with the music. And Doyle looking at him like, maybe I am a little bit attracted. And I'm like, Doyle over here, yes, having bi panic between Cordelia and Angel.
Yeah. Honestly, I was like, yes.
He can't tell if he wants to be Angel or be with Angel at this point.
Yeah. Honestly, I feel like that's a very valid thought to have, I think.
So cut to Melissa's office, and this whole scene is really interesting. I'm always so intrigued as to why they make choices with introducing a character, because that first scene really sets up how you're going to view them and even sets up kind of like where they're going in the episode. So she's ordered a birthday cake for her friend Penny, and they wrote Benji on it. I will say I cringed really hard when she was taking her finger and double dipping in the cake.
Not in these COVID times.
That's what I wrote too. I was like, nope, not in post-COVID life. That is your cake now.
Also, lady. Just like not in any time, because that's...
Yes. Also valid. Yeah. No, like, and then like leaves it there. And the girl like walks in and is like, oh, how sweet, which is very sweet. But I'd be like, hey, good. Like, go yeah. throw that away now. Like, it's very clear you're eating my cake.
Also, nobody actually does that in offices. It's just miserable in there.
So. Also, that is a very large cake for one person.
Ooh, maybe it's for the whole office. Maybe
it's a Costco cake. So judging from the introduction of Melissa, she seems like a very warm, a very compassionate, caring person. I mean, this is very sweet to think of, like giving a plant, getting her a cake, you know, and the fact that her coworkers seem to really enjoy and like her, I think speaks a lot about her. So then she has a delivery of these like massive flowers. And she opens the card and it says, my undying love, which is a very creepy thing to say. The music kind of cues us in that this is not a wanted message. Melissa immediately looks like scared. Then she goes into the bathroom with some pills and takes them, stares at herself in the mirror. And I like how they set up this whole shot right here, the mirror shot as she's leaving, especially, it makes us feel like she's being watched either by us, the audience, or something else. And it also kind of sets us up into thinking that he implanted something in her eye. The idea that like she's staring at herself, yes, as she's eating that. I feel like they should have gone somewhere with that. They like totally did a red herring with that.
I hadn't seen this episode in a long time and I kind of forgot what was going to happen. And yes, that was like my immediate thought when she was like, it feels like he can see me or something. And I was like, oh my God, it's her eyes. And then I remembered that it was like different. Yeah. But yeah, that's where my mind went.
Yeah. Well, the fact that he did surgery, she said something about like there's a nerve behind her eye. And I was like, that's so interesting, yes, that they would do that. And I know it sets up for like Cordelia later on saying, well, you know, maybe like there's some man-made reason that this is happening. Maybe it's not supernatural. But we know the powers that be sent us or sent Angel to her. Mm-hmm. So it's clearly going to be supernatural. I don't know. It just is a very weird thing to kind of throw in there.
Maybe it was just like a misdirect, like to make us think one thing, but then the reveal with like the eyeball to be like really shocking. Very gross.
Yeah. All right. So then Melissa's walking in the parking garage and Angel is waiting in the shadows by her car. Okay. So I got to say, Angel is very attractive, and I think he has pretty privilege, which is why these women don't, like, immediately call the cops, spray him with mace, and take off. Because why, Angel? I know you have
also,
to do
also, he approaches
dark.
Her immediately and, like, says follows her name. Her. Like, if a man came up to me and was like, hey, Leia, how are you doing tonight? I would be very afraid because, first of all, like, how do you know my name? Second of all, who are you? Like, he did not approach that well.
Well, and he kind of like, she keeps walking to her car, doesn't stop, and he's like chasing after her. And I was like, Angel, you're a little imposing.
Angel, take a step back, honey. Please.
Yes, I know. But I do think, babe, that this moment is more realistic than the other moments we've had. The fact that she like doesn't believe him and is kind of like, okay, I want nothing to do with you, and leaves. I was like, okay, this feels more like, you know, realistic. Right. Also, I do want to point out, he says, he like pulls out his calling card and he's like, it's what I do. It's my job. And I heard your voice in my head, because he's a hero. That's what heroes do.
He is, but he doesn't look like a hero in this scene.
Right. But maybe Angel, do it in broad daylight, just, or send somebody else.
But I mean, also on the other hand, I feel like Angel's like really trying. Like he's really, really putting himself out there and approaching people, because he knows, yeah, like we know what Angel's motivation is and what his purpose is to be there. And it's not malicious. It's actually to help people, but it comes off as very like scary, especially to like a woman. Mm-hmm. But it's like, it's also kind of funny that he's like, he's trying, you know, he knows that there's urgency to this and he needs to get it done. So he's doing everything that he knows he can do, but he's also very socially awkward.
Right.
So it's also like, Angel, baby,
read the room.
Just like take it like a little bit slower, like bump into her first, maybe. Give the lady a heads up. I don't know.
Yeah.
Don't just come at her with her own name. Like,
right. Just say, excuse me, miss, or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that he improved this episode versus the times we've seen him in the past episodes. I think that he was a little bit more confident and comfortable. He's still very awkward, but I could tell there was very much like, I've done this a couple times. I know what I'm doing. Yeah, that whole thing. So props to you, Angel. So then Melissa's like, no, thanks. And she leaves. And Angel's like, I scared her. And this is so sweet. He's very aware. He's like, I know that I am scary. It was the trench coat and the hair. I know. And Doyle's like, well, it sounds like she was already scared. And Angel's like, am I intimidating? He's like pacing back and forth. He's
like, I mean, little bit.
Do I put people off? And Cordelia's like, maybe you should mix up the black on black look, which I absolutely love, because then the next scene when they say Melissa's coming over, he goes to change.
I have to change my shirt.
So cute. It's so cute.
And he wears the same shirt, but in beige.
That's what I wrote too. Yes. He's like every other basic white dude out there who just like, I like this shirt, so I'm going to get it in 15 different colors. Yeah. And then accidentally buy the same color twice because I really like that color.
Listen, for the record, I love Angel in black, and I like him in light colors too. What am I even saying?
I was like, what are you talking about? You like him in all the colors.
Yeah.
Not that we've seen him in all the colors, but you know.
He did wear that beige jacket in Some Assembly Required in Buffy season 2.
That is like burnt into my brain, because I think that's the only time we see him like that ever.
And he also wore a light colored shirt on his date with Buffy in Halloween.
Wait, didn't he wear the Hawaiian shirt in the pilot when he's like, hey man, yes, how's the game?
When he was trying to go undercover.
And then immediately rips it off because he's like, oh, forget this. Anyway, okay. So Cordelia's like, well, if she hires us, then I'll get involved. But I do like that Angel suggests that Cordelia should approach, because honestly, I think that might be a good idea. I really genuinely think having Cordelia go in, introduce herself, they would get a lot more business that way. I know Cordelia tends to be like uber blunt and stuff, but she is immediately disarming because she's a woman. And I think that she could possibly get better at it and stuff. And she displayed empathy when talking to Melissa when they were in the room. So I honestly think that was a great, great idea. I don't know why they didn't decide to run with that one. So then I really like how Doyle kind of steps in and talks about why he thinks that Angel should charge people. He says, it's about doing what's best for the people you've helped. And he's like, people get attached when you are, you know, this mysterious savior. But if you're just a man doing a job and getting paid, they feel like they can pay you and move on, which I was like, that was excellent logic, Doyle. And that's the only way you're going to be able to swing Angel over to your side is by making it seem like it's for other people. Okay, but
it's very contradictory to what he was telling Angel in the pilot, where Angel, you need to make connections and you need to connect with people, and you can't just save them. You have to save their souls. And he was pushing that on Angel from the very beginning, that Angel needs to make human connections. And now he's saying the opposite. So it's like,
well, is he saying the opposite, though? He's telling Angel he needs to make connections, but he's saying that the other people need to have a disconnect between seeing Angel as a savior versus someone that helps them out, and then they can move on. Yeah. Angel can stay connected, but they can't. Does that make sense?
Right. Yeah.
So, yeah, I know. I see what you're saying. And I think it is possible for someone to make a connection in the time the angel's doing the job for them and then recognize, okay, like, you were a person that I needed for this time, this place, time to move on, you know?
I think it, like, they showcase that in this episode with, yeah, like, the final scene where she's like, I hope I never see you again, but thank you. And yes, it's like, yes, you too.
She was also the first woman that I didn't feel like there was some sort of, like, romantic tension between her and Angel.
Yeah.
I feel like every girl so far, it's been like, okay, is everyone attracted to Angel? Answer, yes. But, you know? So, I don't know. It was refreshing to see Melissa very obviously, like, he was kind to her. She was appreciative. But it wasn't like she was appreciative because he was a sexy, you know, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I don't want to dwell on it, but this next phrase by Cordelia, it hasn't aged well, but it also is just not kind to say in any age. And it's really cringeworthy. And going back and listening to it now, I was like, whoo, I haven't heard that word used on television in so long. And I'm very, very thankful for it. But actually hearing it come out of someone else's mouth, I was like, oh, like, I'm just so thankful that we've moved past that and we're a little more, like, sensitive to people with disabilities, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It was very jarring for me too. I was just like, oh.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you're like, oh, hey, progress. We've made progress. And it's a little encouraging.
Yeah. That, you know? Yeah. That's very true.
So, all right. Then this creepy scene. Melissa is trying to get money out of her ATM. And this guy walks up and he's like, oh, yeah, it won't work. I've changed your PIN number. And this is interesting because we have no clue who this guy is. We don't know what his relationship to her is. But immediately we're like, oh, is he her husband? Like, what is this? Is he her, like, father, her brother, like, boyfriend? Like, what is going on? She's like, what are you doing here? He tells her that he changed their PIN to the day we met, and then talks about the fact that she's taking tranquilizers, and then says, how many did you take in the bathroom? So right off the bat, we're just being hammered with invasive, 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 and it keeps getting worse and worse. And then he talks about how, like, or Melissa says, we went on one date. And then at the very end of the conversation, he's like, I'll see you tonight. Whoa. And so we're thinking, like, okay, if they've been on one date, they're probably not living together. They're probably not in a long-term relationship. Is he holding her hostage? Like, there's so many questions. It's a very creepy interaction.
He's very he reminded me a lot of Ted.
Yeah.
Just the way he was talking and the things he was saying, it was very much, like, almost robotic and, like, creepy.
Incredibly possessive, controlling. His comment on her weight, this is level of, I just said it, possessive and controlling, but, like, that's what it was. Like, this is ownership over her life and every aspect of her life just made it really, like, you kind of understand how she's feeling. They just did a very good job of setting that up, making her feel powerless, you know?
I think with the with the flowers and then this scene, it's safe to assume that, like, this is a person that's, like, stalking her and these are unwanted advances and, like, yeah.
The fact that, yes, he knows where she works. He knows her PIN number. He knows where she lives. Like, all of this stuff that if they've been on one date, he finds this all out on his own. That's just absolutely terrifying. Also, this actor is the same guy that plays De Hoffren over on Buffy, Anya's old boss, which is just so funny because the actor is phenomenal and plays those two characters just way different. Andy Umberger is the actor's name. Apparently, he's one of five actors to appear on Buffy, Angel, and Firefly. I cannot confirm which five actors it is because I have not seen Firefly. But yeah, it's just interesting. And we know Joss likes to reuse his actors. And then while we're talking about stalking, I do want to take a moment to talk about it. So this is stalking. This is the definition of it. And I think sometimes within the Buffyverse, like specifically about Angel, there tends to be a lot of confusion and misconception about whether Angel goes and stalks Buffy. And I read this review, Shangle's review, and he says this about the scene, and I thought it was so good. He says, it's so creepy because it's such a passive-aggressive thing to do. It's so intrusive. Ronald is displaying to Melissa that he has total control over her, even in her everyday mundane actions. He's a constant presence in her life. For that reason, she can never get him out of her mind, which is what he wants. He wants her to be thinking about him constantly. He wants to be the sole focus of her life. That is what stalking is all about. Control. He has it. She doesn't. He's holding all the cards. What can she possibly do to combat this? And I do want to contrast this with Angel. And I think this episode is making a very clear contrast between Angel and Angelus, even in like the subtext, because the whole metaphor here is this is what Angelus did to Buffy in season two. There's a lot of parallels back and forth. And so I think, again, like there's a clear distinction between the two characters. And I think that like if you want to know what stalking is, this is like the perfect archetype for that.
Agreed.
So then Melissa's terrified. Dahofrin or Ronald leaves. Not Dahofrin. Ronald leaves. And I know. I'm like, wait a minute. Not Dahofrin. Separate character. Separate.
Maybe it is Dahofrin. And he's just like living. He lives his like regular life in LA. And then when he goes to Sunnydale, he's a vengeance demon pimp or something.
Vengeance demon pimp? I'm using that when Dahofrin comes back. I'm going to be like, he's the vengeance demon pimp, leaving a double life. Woo. Oh, what a switch. In his off hours, this is what Dahofrin's doing. That's insanity.
He does surgery and like replaces people's body parts. And then
as if he doesn't have enough his to
eyes.
Do.
Sorry, it's eyes. I don't know.
That's so random. Vengeance demon pimp is my favorite thing ever, though. All right, so over in Angel Investigations, Melissa decides to call. And then we have Melissa talking about how it's been going on for 7 months. It wasn't so bad at first. That is a long time. That is so long.
Such a long time.
The guy's name is Dr. Ronald Meltzer. He's a neurosurgeon. He helped out with – she had an infected nerve in her eye. He asked her out, which right away, huge red flag because you have the patient-client or patient-doctor privilege thing. Like he knows all this stuff about her and yeah, that's just a huge violation of privacy. And the power dynamic is icky. She says, I didn't want to, but – and I really appreciated that Cordelia empathizes with her here. She goes, he helped you. You felt obligated. And I'm like, yeah, yeah, that's exactly what happened. Plus doctor, Cordelia's still thinking about money
here. I was just going to say, I think it – the fact that he's a doctor makes it even more like almost more sinister because doctors are supposed to be people that you trust, right? They're very like trustworthy people. And like you said, they know a lot about you, so – I think it's just – it's it adds that, like, little bit more, like, sinisterness to it.
Yeah. So she's like, he starts calling me, showing up at my work, my apartment, saying that we had something special, that we should get married. And Angel's like, then it got worse. And she's like, yeah. She's like, I can feel him watching me all the time. He knew today that I took my Xanatab, I think is what it is, when I was alone in the bathroom. How did he see that? And then we're like, oh, he implanted something in her eye. Angel's like, all right, we'll help you. Doyle takes her home. And then Melissa's like, okay, wait, wait a minute. How did you know my name? And he's like, oh, I have a friend in the police department. And we're like, wait, no, you don't. Oh, you do, Kate. That's right. And we're like, I see where this is going.
Angel was quick on his feet this episode.
He really was.
He was just like just doing it, just coming up with things like on the fly to get himself out of tight situations. Like, put his acting chops, like, the acting chops, like, what?
Right.
Are you an actor?
Are you an actor? He's like, yes, he is. Apparently, according to that casting agent, he was like, no, you are. You are an actor. Or what does he say? You are a model or something like that. Can't even remember. Yeah, and I wrote in my notes, I was like, Joss and David just poured, like, all their best dialogue into Angel this episode, it felt
They did. They really did.
And Kate for that one scene that she's in.
Which I really liked.
So Cordelia's like, can you imagine a doctor? They examine your body. They know every inch of you. And I was like, Cordelia makes a really good point. And I think of like things like the husband stitch. I don't know if you've ever heard of that. It's where
– Oh, yes.
Yeah. For those of you who don't know, it's where doctors will put in an extra stitch. Like if women tear after giving birth, they'll put an extra stitch in called the husband stitch to make the vagina tighter or whatever, which is so damaging for a woman's body. It's not supposed to be like that. And oftentimes it'll happen without a woman's consent, which is just awful. I've heard of women going in to have breast reduction surgery and the doctor doesn't take off as much as they had agreed upon because he says that she looks better with how it is. You know, like there's just things like that. And obviously, As far as we know, that is not the norm. And I do believe there are good doctors out there, ethical doctors, the majority are. But like, this is a very real thing that women have to live with at times. Like, there is a lot of fear and vulnerability. And so I don't know. I just appreciated that Cordelia was understanding in that moment and giving a voice to something that we've had to think about, you know? So Cordelia and Angel, I heard someone describe this moment as very X-Files, like Cordelia goes very Scully to Angel's Mulder, where she's like, hey, well, maybe it was a natural, like maybe there's something, like he set up a camera. And Angel's like, no, I'm pretty sure it's supernatural. So then we cut to this creepy scene where Melissa is getting ready for bed in her bedroom. And I don't know, if I were her, I'd be asking to stay with a friend or something. But I guess that's the whole point of this episode, is that
she's been living like this for 7 months. You also have to remember.
Well, and I think too, this also points to the fact that like people like Ronald pick women who are vulnerable and who are alone and don't have anybody else. Ugh. And Ronald is just sitting in his desk and he essentially has his eyeball. Like, what did it do? Like, he was sitting in his desk and the eyeball just floated randomly down a couple blocks to wherever she I don't even know.
Yep. That's what it seems like.
He's watching her and it's terrifying and it's gross and it's creepy and it's the absolute worst. So Angel goes into the precinct, and I think this is something we were talking about last episode, where the lighting and the set department just really struggled specifically with this set because it was so bright, and having Angel in it, they recognized it probably was not as dark as it should be for Angel, but like, they could only do the best that they could do, you know?
Yeah.
So we see Kate again. And this is interesting because when I first watched the show, I didn't expect Kate to be a reoccurring character and to pop back up again. But I don't know that I like that she's back, but I felt like she was significantly better in this episode than she was in Lonely Heart.
They like used her really well in this episode, I think. It like kind of established that like, okay, so Angel has a cop friend and they're going to be helping each other sometimes. And that kind of gives her an in to like be on the show. As like a recurring character. Yeah. Yes. And like a way that makes sense, not just like, oh, this is Kate and she's going to pop in every once in a while.
Yeah, I agree. I was actually thinking that too. I was like, this is very organic. Mm-hmm. So Angel's like, there's a girl, she's being stalked. I think it could get ugly. So then Kate goes to look up all the information about her. And then we have Doyle walking next to Melissa at her work, which I was like, this is a good call, having Doyle hang out with her. It's just interesting, like, as they were talking and going back and forth, like, Melissa was like, yeah, I used to do things like skydiving. I used to just be, like, adventurous and, you know, having so much fun. Like, the world was my oyster. I could do whatever it is I wanted. She's like, you know, the past few months have made me just absolutely terrified. I don't want to go out. I don't want to do anything anymore. Doyle's like, well, you know, I think that at the end of this, you're going to be able to go back. And I like how they set the stage for her inevitable confrontation with Ronald later on. I was listening to Passion of the Nerds analysis, and he felt like that end confrontation wasn't earned, and that since we didn't know enough about Melissa, that it kind of just felt like the writers just wanted her to have her moment. And I really disagree, because I feel like they set enough ahead and in advance to show us that Melissa actually is someone who really like is living her own life, is very confident, but that even the most confident and the most like the strongest person can get beat down after having someone trying to control you for 7 months, you know?
Yeah. I think they did a good job of like emphasizing the amount of time that she's been going through this, and like, you know, this part where she's talking about how she's, you know, it's very isolating and very hard on her like everyday life and how it's taken a toll on her. I think I can kind of see what Passion of the Nerd would mean, that it's not earned in the sense that, like, we didn't see that. They're just telling it to us. But I feel like that's where the confrontation at the end feels like it fits for me, because that's where this all of this has been leading to,
yeah.
It feels like.
Yeah.
Just all of these, like, this information that they're dropping in our laps, it feels like it's leading to that, like, final confrontation where she gets angry,
especially with the next conversation between Kate and Angel. Yeah. You know, so Kate's like, yeah, your girl did file a report like 2 months ago, the doctor responded, and then a lot of noise from his lawyers. And then we have Wolfram and Hart dropped again. And I'm like, okay, are they going to be a thing? This keeps getting teased. When are we going to get into this? Like, they keep dropping these little Easter eggs. And I'm like, okay. She said that they filed a restraining order against her, which I'm like, oh my goodness, this poor girl. And she says, but there's no record of violence for the doctor, so we can't really do anything. And Kate's like, all right, I'll put a uniform on her building, but we can only do that for like a night or two until we probably actually have evidence or whatever. And Angel's like, my client is really scared. And I love how Kate says, then you better help her get mad, because that is the only way she'll be able to fight him. And Angel's like, well, hopefully I'll do the fighting, because, you know, she hired him. And Kate says, that's not what I mean. This guy could go to jail tomorrow, Angel, and still kill her in her dreams every night. I've put a few of these creeps away, and the hardest thing is to know that he is still winning. She's still afraid. He took her power away, and no one can get it back for her but her.
I love this. Yeah.
I think it's so good. I think that it works. I have to remind myself, I'm like, oh, it also kind of like feels like an oversimplification. But I'm like, for what it is in this episode, like, obviously, yes, she needs physical protection. Obviously, yeah, she probably could not go up against Ronald all on her own with her two hands or whatever. But the system only works if you're willing to push past your fear. You know what I mean? And I think that's a really cool theme for the episode, you know?
I think it's also like taking a look into what the victim is experiencing, rather than, you know, this has been going on for 7 months and it's taken a toll on Melissa. And it's like, yes, we want to get rid of the stalker and Angel's going to save the day. But it's like, what happens after? What lasting effect does this have on the victim? And I really liked what Kate said, because it kind of gave you an idea as to like what's going on with Melissa. And it wasn't all about just, because for Angel, it's like, I need to save her from this guy because he's putting her in like immediate physical harm. But for Angel, he's not a woman, first of all, that's being stalked by somebody. He wouldn't know that that's like, because also he's not a helpless person. Like, he's super powered, right? So I just thought that was like a really cool part that they put in the episode, just to kind of give you an idea about just the toll it takes on like a victim. And like, you do need to get angry and take your power back, pretty much. So
yeah.
I don't know. I really liked it. And I liked that it was coming from Kate, because it kind of makes you like her more. It makes you think like,
yes,
Kate has something to offer that maybe other people don't. Mm-hmm. Kate has something to offer that Doyle doesn't and Cordelia doesn't, because she's experienced more of like this type of stuff. Like, she's a police officer. She's put a few people like this away. Like, it just shows that like she's got something valuable to bring to like Angel's perspective of like redemption, I think.
Yeah.
That's how I read it, at least.
No, yeah. That was, yeah, super well said. I love that. Bravo. End of the podcast. No, and I love that perspective though on Kate, because I think that we don't want just like rehashing of the same type of person, you know? Yeah. On the show, we want to see the different strengths, the different weaknesses. We want to see how people balance each other out and help. And I definitely walked away from this episode liking Kate a little bit more. I think she was very much the needed voice in this episode. So, bravo. So Angel sneaking in to Dr. Meltzer's office, because what would an investigation be without a little bit of sleuthing, right? So he looks in, he hears the doctor consulting with a patient in the next room, and he finds a book called Anything is Possible, and it has a dedication that reads, "Dear Ronald, thanks for having the nerve," in quotations, "to believe." Dr. Meltzer walks in, is obviously like, what are you doing in my office? And Angel, man, like, he must have had this prepared.
Give him an Oscar.
He's like, name's Jensen, I need to talk to you. I was like, whoa, hi, Jensen. Like, you know, like the name.
He has like a moment of panic, and then he's like, end scene.
Yeah.
And he turns around, and I'm just like,
yeah.
Did he just come up with that on the fly? Like, how did he come up with this whole story?
This whole backstory, man. He pulled it like right out of his butt.
Angel wins at improv.
Yeah, I mean, he did say he was the world's best actor in Enemies. He told us, you know?
He wasn't lying.
Yep.
Where is his Emmy?
So Ronald's like, that's it. I'm calling security. Angel immediately pulls out this whole sob story. He's like, my wife had a malignant tumor that's pressing on her ocular cavity. I was like, what the heck? What Angel. In the world? She's going to die unless someone has the nerve to operate. And I was like, okay. Ooh. Okay. The fact that he pulls out, he not only did he create a backstory with like accurate scientific stuff so that this doctor knows that he knows what he's talking about. He like pulls in that line that he read 25 seconds ago and fits it into his backstory. I'm just like,
because he knows it's gonna hit a nerve.
Yeah. Oh,
wink wink.
Oh, ding ding ding.
Ding ding ding. Yeah, that honestly incredible improv by Angel.
Yep. So then Ronald's like, you now have my attention. And he's like, what you're talking about is very difficult and dangerous procedure. I could lose my license.
Which is hold on. This doctor sounds really phony just from that line, because Angel did nothing but tell him that his wife has like something pressing on her ocular, whatever, oculus repairis or whatever.
Yeah. Like,
and this doctor's like, yes, this is very dangerous and I could lose my license, not having seen any like scans.
Right.
Doesn't know what anything is.
Yeah. Is it cancerous? Is it benign? He's like, that makes like, a whole, yeah, difference.
He just went right from there. Like zero to like, I'm going to lose my license if I do this. And I'm just like, you're phony. Like, you're not a real doctor.
Yeah. And he immediately just shuts him down and can't help you. And I'm like, I feel like a compassionate doctor. Like you were talking about how like they want to serve. They want to help. The fact that he's just like, nope, can't help you. I'm like, well, you don't actually care about people. So then Angel, like thinking on the fly, grabs Melissa's picture from the desk, which I was like, this is so clever. Way to get him to keep talking, a way to figure out what he's thinking about, like how he views Melissa, like so good. Says, what does she mean to you? What is she, your wife, your girlfriend, what? I was like, oh, so good. He's like, she's my fiance. And then Angel says, did you know right away that she was the one? And he says, I tell you how. Do you know what it's like to be so much a part of someone that you don't know where they end and you begin? Would you die for her? And I was like, oh, crap. We're talking about Buffy again, aren't we?
Yes, Sarah. Oh. We most certainly are.
Oh, man.
I'm like, Angel knows about this. This is not acting anymore. Angel's not acting anymore. He's talking from experience.
Oh, man. I, like, legit teared up. I was like, man, just, Angel, you'd be a great husband, man.
Honestly.
Then he says, then you understand that I'm not willing to make any compromises. I'm not willing to watch her suffer and die while the law catches up with science. What I'm willing to do is pay you whatever it takes. Think about it, please. All right. So this is so interesting. And I mentioned Shangle's review earlier. And he pointed out a parallel between Angelus and Ronald, specifically in this scene. He says, I mentioned before that you need to have seen Angelus in action in order to truly appreciate this episode. This is because the similarities between Dr. Ronald Meltzer and Angelus are apparent. Going back to Buffy the Vampire Slayer season 2 and other bits and pieces that we've learned about Angelus's past thus far, Angelus had a habit of stalking his victims, especially ones that he had a romantic connection with. He would sneak into Buffy's house and draw pictures of her. He would follow her when she was patrolling. He would stalk her family and friends. He would leave messages for her to find. Dr. Meltzer has these same tendencies that Angelus possesses. It's because of this that Angel creates the fake wife story. He knows that Dr. Meltzer will help him because Dr. Meltzer is obsessed with Melissa. Let's not gloss over the fact that Dr. Meltzer is obsessed with Melissa. It's not love. It's not infatuation. It's obsession. Selfish obsession. Dr. Meltzer represents a large section of what Angel hates about himself. Dr. Meltzer is committing a lot of the crimes that Angelus himself committed similarly to this. Melissa is a lot like Buffy was when Angelus was stalking her. Melissa had lost or has lost her power. She's terrified. She has no idea how to fight back. And even if she did, she doesn't have the strength inside herself anymore to fight back. Eventually, Buffy found that strength and sent Angel to hell with the Cathla. Melissa needs to find that same strength here to even be free or ever be free of Ronald. And Kate reiterates this point to Angel, which I thought was so good. And I think, again, like we see the distinction between Angel and Angelus and stuff. But the parallels here, and this is why I think they make a point in like the next scene or the scene after with Angel and Cordelia talking. And Angel's like, I know how this guy works. Why? Why does Angel know this? Because he has Angelus inside of him and he recognized those same tendencies. And it's just once I realized that, the episode made a lot more sense to me and was a little bit like it actually had a little bit more of a purpose. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So Passion of the Nerd makes the same observation. He even compares Giles's speech to Amy in Bewitched, Bothered, and Bewildered. And he talks about obsession isn't love. He talks about Melissa's speech to Ronald at the end of this episode saying her description of Ronald as just a sadist who gets off on pain is also fitting of Angelus in season two. And Angel's fight here to protect Melissa is him trying to pay the debt for the Buffy season two part of himself that is still there. And then he says something really interesting that is also really important. So listen up, everyone. He said, I think as viewers, Angel's guilt can be frustrating to watch because we so clearly distinguish him between Angel and Angelus, sold and unsold. But Angel isn't really capable of making that distinction for himself so easily. He holds the memories of Angelus's actions as though it was he himself who did them. And if a vampire maintains the same impulses as its human had, and he makes a comparison with Jesse in the pilot of Buffy, just simply with conscience and restraint stripped away, then Angel can feel that some of his actions as Angelus were driven by impulses he had, has, and may always have. And I was like, bravo, snaps. Like, that's like spot on, right? So that's the crux of why Angel's doing what he's doing. And that's why he's really struggling with wanting to charge people. And it's so interesting. They have this episode where he's comparing himself to Angelus subtly, and the metaphor is, and also them going, no, pay, pay, pay. Like, he's wrestling with that, going, this is what I've done. How dare I charge people, you know?
Well said.
Thank you. Thank you, man. Just like, look at us. So eloquent today.
No, I mean, that, because from the beginning of the episode when I said I didn't really get it, I feel like the two scenes that like really stood out to me were that conversation with Cordelia and the end when Melissa's telling him that, you know, he enjoys pain. And I was like, ah, yes, this is Angelus paralleling Ronald. And it all makes sense now. But yeah, that's pretty cool. Yeah. And that's what I mean when I say that Angel doesn't separate himself from Angelus because he literally cannot. Mm-hmm. And you can tell by like when I say that like Angel sees everything, but he doesn't use it against people. But Angelus would. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the difference. Mm-hmm. You know, Angel is... they're similar in a lot of ways, but Angel has that like restraint and the capacity to keep his demon down. And that's like really, it's like really like honorable, yes. I think. Like it's very impressive.
Yeah.
Because we know how evil Angelus is. And to know that he lives inside of like Angel, and Angel has to work like so hard to keep those impulses down is like, that's impressive. Like, kudos to Angel, you know? I feel like he doesn't get enough credit for that.
Yeah, I agree. And if he wants to sit at home in the dark without having to talk to people, let him, because the man is literally fighting his own demons. You know?
Honestly.
And let him have Buffy. Okay?
Please.
Okay. Mm. All right. We're at the hospital. Cordelia's interviewing a nurse. I liked this scene a lot too. I think, okay, this scene was like, hello, Cordelia can do really well with interviewing people. Mm-hmm. Let's have her go talk to the victims first and foremost.
Because like, it's so funny because she'll be like on course and then she'll just be like so blunt, but then she'll come back from it and they'll give her everything.
Yeah.
And she knows like what buttons to push to be like, I'm going to get everything out of you. Like, she knows like, oh, like, this lady wants to talk shit and I can tell. So she goes after like that. She goes, oh, like, you know, this is not going to be that kind of article. And if you're not comfortable, but if you want to like talk shit, like let's talk shit.
Yes, yes, exactly.
And then the girl just spills it all out. And it's like Cordelia knew to do that. And it's incredible.
Yeah. And I think the reason why is because people can tell Cordelia is just being completely honest. Like, she's unashamedly herself. She's so bold, so upfront that you're like, wow, okay, like, I can trust you because I don't get the sense that you're hiding anything from me, you know?
Right.
Yep. I know. It was great. It was great. You nailed it. She gets everything out of this woman, and you're like, okay, tell me the tea. Tell me everything. And the lady's like, all right, he is stingy. He doesn't share his practice, like the stuff that is going on. She says he doesn't share his techniques with the medical community at large. And a lot of what he claims to have done is pretty radical. Cordelia's like what? And then we cut to Cordelia giving all the information to Angel. And she's like reattaching eyes for one thing. Apparently this guy can do anything with a knife, but we don't know, like, or nobody knows exactly how that is happening. She's like, you don't want this guy fixated on you. And then she goes, what is stalking nowadays? The third most popular sport among men. And Angel's over here, click, 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 click. Without missing a beat, he's like, fourth after Luge. And I was like, what? This man is on fire. Like, doesn't he even really miss is. A beat. Like,
Angel's just so confident this episode, and I love it.
I mean, I wrote, seeing Angel on the computer cracking jokes while psychoanalyzing this misogynistic creep, it's just, it gives me so much happiness. It's great.
Honestly, it's a good look on him.
So Cordelia's like, I don't get it. This guy has a lot to lose. What is it about Melissa that's got him going all OJ on her? And Angel says nothing. It's not about Melissa. It's about rage. This guy is too messed up to deal with a real woman, and he can't stand that. So he creates a fantasy about a girl he barely knows. But eventually even she fails him. So he has to hurt her, because when he looks at her, all he sees is how useless he is, how damaged. And I was like, holy crap. Like, you know, Angel, like, he speaks in very, like, short, sweet sentences. Like, he doesn't really monologue a lot. But, like, the fact that he knows this guy front to back, like, forwards and upside down, forwards and centers, or whatever. You know what I mean? Angel knows this guy. And it's, again, like, another picture of Angel recognizes something in himself that is like Ronald. Mm-hmm. They decided to send an email to Joe Recluse, is their nickname for this guy. This guy that went, had like a retreat or a seminar that the stalker was at. And his email does not make sense to me at all, but, you know, it works. He says, I hope you have the nerve to believe that I need help with Ronald Meltzer. I was like, okay. If I got that email, I'd be like, this is spam. This has got to be spam.
Flag.
I do love, love, love this interaction between Cordelia and Angel, and I think it's my favorite of them thus far. It felt very organic. It's well written. It shows how well they work together, but it also showcased both their personalities and the best parts of their personalities so well.
They really played off of each other well in this scene. Like, a great chemistry, like, great back and forth, great quipping. Like, it was really, really good. I agree.
So then Angel's sitting in the Vinpur's darkened room. This whole scene was so weird. This guy, like, the way that they, like, set it up, it, like, was very mystical. And they're, like, sitting on these, like, throne-like chairs. And this guy, like, his name Vinpur sounds like this supervillain, and his voice. And essentially all we get out of this is that he introduced Dr. Meltzer to psychic surgeons, basically saying that, like, Dr. Meltzer doing things made him believe, and that scared him more than anything else. Which I was like, oh, did you not believe what you were actually teaching? But anyway, this actor, his name is Carlos Carrasco, and he was also in Speed with Keanu Reeves and Sandra Bullock, which ironically is another movie that Joss Whedon wrote. He was one of the guys on the boat or on the bus. Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't know that. Interesting.
He technically was a ghostwriter, or a script doctor, I guess is what they call it. So somebody wrote it, and then they sent it to Joss, and he basically, like, doctored it.
Tweaked it.
But if you watch the movie, you can tell Joss's voice just comes through a lot.
That little weasel's had his hands everywhere.
Kind of like a certain Ronald Meltzer. A
little bit.
Speaking of which, let's go to the next scene. Someone else has his hands everywhere.
Ew.
I know. I'm sorry. As soon as I said it.
Oh,
this scene is awful. It's absolutely gross.
Terrible.
It's terrible. It's so gross.
I completely forgot that this scene even existed. And I was like, no, there's no way they're going to go there. His hand, like, no. And then it did. And it's horrifying.
This is all I remember from this episode was this scene because I just can't get it out of my head. Also, the location for her
Hyperion Hotel.
It's the Hyperion Hotel. Yes.
Which, interesting. Wonder what that is.
Yes. So the location is actually the historic Los Altos Apartments of Los Angeles, which later becomes the exterior model for the Hyperion Hotel. And I can't tell you any more about it because, you'll find out later. So those that know, know.
Yeah. Who is she?
So cut to Melissa sleeping in bed. Oh, creepy. A doctor's outside. The officer comes up. Not a great officer. He deserved to die, honestly. I know that's kind of harsh. But for real, though, like, he comes in there and he's like, oh, sorry. Yeah, you don't have hands. You're not the person we're looking for. Doesn't ask for ID. Doesn't say, why are you standing? Do you live here?
Honestly.
Let me see you try to get in. Like, this guy just...
Like, just because he doesn't have hands doesn't... like means that he's not stalking some, like standing outside watching somebody. Like,
yeah, I don't understand why this guy did. Yeah, it was awful. All right, so I'm not going to go into details. You all know what happened. The hands creep in. It's disgusting. They go all over Melissa. She wakes up. She screams. Oh, it's so horrible.
So violating. Like, ugh, it's so rapey. It's just, ugh.
It's incredibly, incredibly disturbing, and I don't like it. Don't like it. So Melissa screams. Officer runs in. Then we have this like weird, like the hands choke the officer. I was like, okay, what was his end goal here? Like just disappear and everyone thinks she's crazy. And then you go back to what you're doing. Like
that's what I was thinking. I'm like, why did he have to? Couldn't he just like not do that? And just like wait until the officer left? Like,
yeah.
Like, why?
Also, this officer, again, not great. He, like, runs in. He's like, what happened? What happened? And she's, like, hysterical. And he's like, lady, I can't help you if you don't tell me what's wrong. I was like, dude, just go check.
Terrible.
Go check. Like, he doesn't zero even stars. Check.
Also, he just, like, glances in the bedroom and, like, takes a quick look at the – he's like, there's nothing in here.
Yeah.
Were you just having a nightmare? Like, yes. Because women – lie and say they have nightmares all the time. Like, yes, of course she had a nightmare. Why would she tell the truth? Ugh.
Clearly you are stationed outside of here for a reason. Like, you've been told to watch this woman because she's talked about a stalker. Like, it's not some random person. Yeah. Anyway, whatever.
Fired.
Yeah, well, dead.
Fired from life.
Exactly. Good riddance. Angel comes in and comforts Melissa. She's like, his hands. And Angel goes, I know what he can do. And we're like, wait, what? The last scene, you were over here like, I'm just not sure how he does it. I'm like, how did we get to that point? But somehow Angel has arrived to
Angel
the
just knows
correct
everything.
Conclusions. He does. This episode, he kind of does. And I kind of believe him too. But I also like... I'm not sure what Angel's goal was too, because like he had to know that Ronald is watching Melissa. So Angel's got to know that Ronald would see Melissa with Angel, put two and two together. So I feel like Angel knows everything in this episode except for the one thing he should know, which is that Ronald is seeing everything.
Maybe it was a part of his plan the whole time. Maybe it was bait.
Maybe, yeah.
But it wasn't.
It wasn't.
I'm just saying.
I don't feel like it was. I don't feel like Angel would be like, yes, drug me.
I think it was a misstep. Yeah.
So we're still in Melissa's house. The officer's dead body is being wheeled out. And Kate is like in the dark over here like, man, this is not making sense. Like, how was he supposed to get in? Like, there was nothing in there. The doors were all locked. You know, she has bars on her windows. The security cameras show nothing. And I thought, at this rate, I don't know how they're going to be able to keep the truth from Kate for much longer. Like, they're going to have to tell her.
This is not adding up. Yeah.
Nope.
Because she's smart. Like, they're showing us that, like, Kate is asking the right questions. And it's like, how long is Angel going to be able to lie to her or, like, avoid telling her the truth? And find out next time on Angel the Series.
Yep. Investigating Angel, where Kate investigates Angel with us.
I know. Like that.
Thank you. Thank you. Just made that up. Look at me.
Very good.
I'm channeling my inner Angel.
Oh my God. As you should, queen.
Thank you. Yes, I agree. Okay. So Kate's like, I pulled the prince. If they match his, he's going down. Doyle's like, good. We can put him behind bars for about 90 seconds until he skitters through him.
I'm just literally imagining body parts falling out of like this jail cell. Just crawling out of jail. Oh my God.
And then Doyle's like, not a lot of things that make me shudder, but this guy crawling around under the covers, at least it was just his hands down there. No, dude. No, it's not just anything. It was bad enough that his hands were down there. I mean, at this point, anything. Anyway. Okay. I wish I hadn't even thought of that. Yes. Yes, we know.
I'm literally not sleeping with covers tonight.
I'm sorry.
I'm just going to sleep with like nothing.
I feel like that's worse. Make it harder for him. Put the covers on. Get an extra blanket. True.
Because it's not August. Eyes, oh my God.
Yep. All right. So Angel's like, he's out of control. Doyle's like, yeah, anything that comes between him and his obsession. And then he's like, wait a minute. Aren't we in between him and his obsession? Wait a minute. Doyle's immediately like, uh-oh. And then Angel, I don't know how Angel came to this conclusion. Again, there's some parts of this episode that are like, how are we getting here? Like, I feel like Angel's like 10 steps ahead and we're like, wait, keep up. We need to keep up with you. So Angel's like, if his body parts go long enough without blood and oxygen, they're going to deteriorate. Okay.
How did you know this, Angel?
How are his body parts able to move without being attached? Like, at what point do the laws of science just, like, they work for some things but not others? It doesn't make sense. Anyways, okay. So Doyle's like, should we break him down and box him up? And I really like that they do have that in here because, again, it's reminiscent of the judge that, right around when Angelus kind of was resurrected, I guess, for lack of a better term. So I think there are specific parallels to that. So Angel's like, all right, protector. And so then we have Doyle and Cordelia in Angel's apartment just duct taping everything, which I was like, you forget human hands are putting this together and his hands can take it apart. I don't know.
His hands are human.
Yeah, his hands are human as far as we know. Melissa's like just not believing what's happening. She's like, this is ridiculous. You must think I'm crazy. And Angel says, no, I believe you. And going back to kind of what you said about victims and stuff, this isn't a hugely important part of a victim being able to get their power back and be able to move forward with their life. Having someone, even if it's just one person, look at you and say, I believe you. You're not crazy. This is not in your head. You're not overreacting. You are valid for feeling these things. That is the most healing thing, the most empowering thing possible. Just having one person that says, I believe you. Like, ugh. And this poor woman has been gaslit, has been manipulated for the past several months. And having Angel tell her, like, no, we're taking this just as seriously as you've been wanting to take this, I think has got to be so empowering for her. Mm-hmm. Melissa says, thanks. I'm not going to cry anymore. At least I hope not. I'm tired of crying and being afraid. So Angel goes and gets a bunch of steel boxes for packing up people's body parts. The phone rings. This guy agrees to meet in the middle of the night. They don't think that's sketch. Maybe this was Angel's plan. The fact that he was like expecting it to happen that night. I don't know. Angel goes over to his office bringing the steel box. And Ronald is smart. He uses his hand to kind of make it look like he's doing something over here. And then when Angel's distracted looking at one hand, he shoots him with this, I think it's like poison or something. It's like, but it was like supposed to kill him, I think.
It's a paralytic or something.
So then like as Angel's like gasping and everything, he's like, that's your heart slowing down as the paralytic takes effect. And I'm like, wait a minute.
Like, aha, his heart doesn't beat.
Wait a minute. But then why is it working? So what is happening?
Like,
the guy is literally talking about what's happening to him and we're seeing it happen, but we know that his heart doesn't beat. Yeah.
I fully expected Angel to be like acting
that scene.
Yeah, like I literally thought that Angel was like going like 100% into like, yeah, this drug is working. And then he was going to like lay on the floor and then this guy was going to like lean over him and Angel was just going to get up and like kill him.
That's what I thought too.
I genuinely thought Angel, because I was like, there's no, like Angel's heart doesn't beat. He's a dead body. There's no reason that this drug should be working.
He also has no breath.
Yeah, and he's like, you know, sweating and like breathing hard. And I was like, this has to be another one of his Oscar-worthy performances. Right.
But then they cut to Angel's point of view and his vision's getting blurry and the guy sounds strange.
This is working on Angel.
You're slipping, man. This is not one of your best work. Like, just got to tell you that, you know, go fix it. Anyway, all right. So the guy leaves. Angel's like on the floor, and we're all supposed to be like, "Oh no! And no, Angel's gonna die." We all know he's gonna get up.
Like, this is not gonna kill him. Obviously, like
it'll just make him pass out temporarily for reasons unknown. All right. So Doyle is taping up, and I like this scene between Cordelia and Doyle because I am a sucker for any time they're pushing the Cordelia and Doyle romance because I just want to see how this is going to – I want to see how this is going to happen. Cordelia just seems – okay, that's my question for you. Is she oblivious or is she just not into Doyle? Because at one point, like, he's like, well, people need people and people who need people. And he's like taking a step closer to her. He's like, are the luckiest. And then she like – pushes him away and she's like, either you like them and they don't like you or you can't stand them. And I was like, does Cordelia know that Doyle is into her?
I think that Doyle is not Cordelia's conventional type of man. Mm. So she sees him and she sees like a loser. And that's how she was with Xander at first. And then they started spending more time together. And they were put in different dangerous situations where they had to work together. And then her and Xander became a thing. So I feel like for Cordelia, she thinks that she's like above him, like he's beneath her somehow because he's not, you know, he's not tall and like a conventionally attractive, although I think he's a very good looking guy. I just think for Cordelia, she doesn't really see him as like a viable option for her because she views herself as like, you know,
hot stuff
above him. I think that's it. So I'd like to see, like you said, I'd like to see like where it goes because we've seen her go through this a little bit with Xander. Even though they're all like so hot, like not one of them is like, it's like so stupid that I'm even saying this because they're all just so like pretty to look at.
Right.
But I think that's where Cordelia is coming from.
Yeah, totally. I will say I do wish, I don't know, sometimes I go back and forth on this. I kind of wish we had, or like we hear a little bit more about her, not necessarily talking about Xander specifically, but like making references to the relationship she had. But I guess it is almost like it is very Cordelia to just be like, nope, she like brushes her hands off like that's done. I'm never referencing that again. But I mean, in season 3 of Buffy, it was very much a absolute heartbreak for Cordelia. Like she, it broke her heart. And for the rest of season 3, that's something that they really like kind of hammered home that she was just very angry and very bitter about it. I do know that she moved past it by the prom and stuff like that. But I do wish that we maybe had a sentence or two of her mentioning a past relationship. It kind of almost feels like the show of Angel is trying so hard to make a break clean cut from Buffy that they just don't even want to mention that because they don't want to like, oh, do we have to do crossovers now? Do we have to like bring Cordelia back or whatever? But I think that like with Joss telling Cordelia or Charisma, sorry, Joss telling Charisma that she could go back to Buffy if Angel didn't work, I think that it would have been good if they had maybe laid a little bit. Obviously, we know that it did work and stuff, but it would have been interesting if they had kind of thrown a few of those things out. Because if Cordelia had come back, I don't know how she would have meshed with the rest of the gang. You know what I mean? Especially because she never talked about them, you know?
I feel like with Cordelia, it's really interesting because she was on Buffy for 3 seasons. But what do we really know about her outside of like surface level stuff?
Right.
You know, like even the move over to Angel. We don't know anything about her parents. Like, we know what's going on. Like, they're bankrupt. They lost everything, blah, blah, blah. But, like, does Cordelia talk to her parents?
Yeah.
How does Cordelia feel about moving away from – like, I feel like we just don't – it's like Cordelia is there and it's always just in the moment. And we are never looking into, like, who Cordelia is as a person. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
And we didn't really get too much insight in Buffy. So it's kind of like
– I was just going to say, like, I'm not talking personality-wise because I feel like we've gotten to know Cordelia's, like, you know, bully side, but also her soft side and like different sides of her as like a person. But just in terms of like Cordelia's life, her surroundings, how she came to be how she is, like we don't have a lot of background information on Cordelia. She's basically just like there for like what they need her to be at the time.
Yep, yep. There's not a lot that this sounds so weird. There's not a lot that really humanizes her other than the fact that she's a little self-centered, honestly. She's relatable in those instances, but because of that, she works really well for what the writers have always wanted her to do, which is, hey, summarize where we are at, which they did a lot in season three. They would just use Cordelia to kind of summarize where everybody's been at. They use her a lot of times to just push the plot forward because she is so blunt. They can use her bluntness without having to actually like find clever ways of inserting things. And so because of it, like we love her for it, but there's a little bit of depth that I think that is missing to the character. And in a lot of ways, I feel like when we've talked about this, the character got a complete like reimagining once she went on to Angel. Like in a lot of ways, obviously there like is
overnight,
there is some cohesiveness with her on Buffy, but it almost feels like she's almost a whole new character that we know about as much as we do with Doyle, you know?
Yeah, I agree.
So as they continue to talk, we have Ronald's bits and pieces, his hands slowly trying to get inside of Angel's apartment. But I got to say, this is like the most we've seen of Angel's apartment so far. And I just love his aesthetic. I love how warm, how much personality, how much texture is in there. It's just so, so cute.
It's very cozy. I feel like it's very like him and Giles have very similar aesthetics. They do.
You know? It's very rustic, but masculine, but still has that warmth to it. You know what I mean? Yeah. All right. So Melissa falls asleep. Doyle and Cordelia are like, wait a minute. We hear something. Ronald must be trying to sneak in. And I like how they intentionally have a conversation as they sneak in there to kind of like throw Ronald off. They're like, hey.
I love this scene for them. They did such a good job.
They did.
Were like, just so good.
Well, they didn't. They communicated without words and like gelled. And I was like, it's moments like this that you're like, this shows how much of a team they've become. And I think that's what makes the episode like really rewarding. We need episodes like this because it's very natural for the gang to have a few clients that would be coming in as they're getting to know each other. We can't just jump straight to the big bad of the episode or of the season. We have to like, it's natural, you know? So Ronald once again is trying to throw people off and he succeeds. He rattles the trap door to the sewers. The hand runs out and starts to choke Doyle as the other hand lets in the actual Ronald into the front door. Ugh, so creepy. So then Ronald immediately grabs, and this looks like that hurt. He grabs Cordelia, hits her head against the wall. So both Doyle and Cordelia are out. Poor Melissa wakes up to her worst nightmare. And he's like, I'm more than meets the eye, but you never bothered to find out, did you? You just took advantage of my kindness. Okay. Okay.
Yuck.
I'm very disappointed in you, Melissa. And Melissa is just like absolutely terrified. He pulls out this scalpel. And then we have this moment with Melissa. She says, I think you disappoint yourself. I think you gave up on being loved a long time ago, and now you're just another creep who gets off on pain.
Ooh, burn.
You turned yourself into a freak, Ronald, a vile, repulsive freak, and I'm done being afraid of you. You can cut me and you can kill me, but it still won't change what you are. Ah, Angel was right. You're weak. And then, of course, Ronald, I'm weak. Then how was it I killed him? And then Angel, like, slides open the door and goes, inefficiently.
I love this. I love
so
it.
So funny. Oh, my gosh. All right. So then they fight. His teeth fly out. He goes to
bite
Angel.
That was so weird.
That was so weird. I was like, really? That's the best you have? But I think that was also Joss and David being like, let's have the vampire figure out what it was like to be bit. Angel smashes his teeth, hurts Ronald, and he ends up taking off his head. Ugh. that's over. Cut to Angel's office the next day. Cordelia's making coffee again. Oh, goody.
She's not even making coffee. She's just pouring new coffee on top of old coffee grinds. Oh, my God. So gross.
Come on,
Cordelia. Not even changing the filter. Like, this is unforgivable. I'm sorry.
That's it.
You had one job, Cordelia. Your only job is to literally do coffee.
The rest of the series is going to be Cordelia trying to redeem herself for the horrible coffee she made in this episode.
Please.
Angel's like, I buried Ronald in 12 steel boxes under 20 cubic feet of concrete in the floor of LA's newest subway station. I was like, yep.
How?
That'll do it. Angel knows all because that's what heroes do.
I feel like Angel just like has friends all over like LA and he just goes to them and he goes, hey man, can I just help?
Put these steel boxes in here while you're pouring these concrete? Like,
yeah, like it's fine. There's nothing in there. Meanwhile, like Ronald's hand is just like rattling in there. Ronald's trying to get out.
Yeah.
Ronald's teeth are just like going.
Could you imagine? Oh my gosh. All right, the door opens and Melissa walks in carrying a potted plant. Ugh, okay, so as someone who knows plants, this hurt my heart a little bit because she gave him a calathea and it's going to die. It's going to die. They are the pickiest plants alive. They're so dramatic. They're beautiful. They're gorgeous plants. But literally, their leaves will raise and lower depending upon the time of day. They follow the sun. But they're also ridiculously dramatic. If you don't water them, you'll come in. My husband thought mine was dead. It was like draped all over. And I was like, no, it's just dramatic. I watered it and its leaves went boing all the way back up again. It needs very specific light and humidity. And this is Los Angeles. It's either going to fry or it's going to die of dehydration because Cordelia won't water it or it needs humidity. Like, yeah. Anyway.
Do we think that this is the plant that dies in episode 8?
Wait, there's a plant that dies in episode 8? Yes. Yes, it's this one. Whatever it is. Yeah. It's just a calathea.
Remember this plant.
Now, if she'd given him the plant that she gave her friend earlier, which was a Philodendron or a Pothos, I couldn't see close enough, that would thrive. So now you all have been – I'm sorry. Now that I have plants, I like analyze all the plants in every single episode. So anyway, okay. All right. I'm so geeky. Let's move on.
I love how you're like, Angel's plant is going to die.
That's what he says. She's like, I brought this plant for you guys. And Angel's like, oh, I hope it doesn't need light. And I was like, oh, unfortunately, it needs a very specific amount of light. But it's very pretty. Never.
You're like, it'll be pretty for a week and then it's going to die.
Not even 2 days. They're so dramatic. Oh, they're the
2 days.
They're the Cordelia of plants, let me tell you.
Oh my God. That is so funny.
It's gorgeous, but yes. Anyway. Melissa's like, I'm sure it'll be fine in here. And I was like, he lies. You are not a plant woman.
That's cold.
And they're expensive too. Okay. All right. Moving on from plants. Everyone is like, skip. I don't care. Cordelia's like, can I offer you some coffee? Melissa's like, oh, coffee. No, no. Like she's like burned from the last time. She's like, please no.
Oh, God.
Places to go, people to see. And then Cordelia and Doyle start coughing in the most like obvious way. It's so annoying.
This part is so uncomfortable.
It is so uncomfortable.
I literally hate that they put Angel in that position.
Yeah, yeah.
If that was my friends and they made me do that, I would literally ghost them. I would be like, I'm never talking to you again.
Well, he's technically their boss. I'd be sitting them down being like, you can't do that or else I'm going to fire you.
Yeah.
So Melissa, you know, thankfully is like, oh, yes, I'm going to pay you. That's the other reason I'm here. Pulls out the check, gives it to Angel, and Cordelia just like slides right in and is like, I'll take that. Thank you. And Angel's like, I didn't do it for money, like trying to redeem himself here. And Melissa's like, oh, please, you earned it. And then she's like, well, I hope I'll never see you again. He's like, me too. And I was like, okay. And Doyle's like, see, that didn't go so bad. Cordelia's like, see, you can save people, be heroic, and still get money. Is this a great country or what? Guess what, Cordelia? You can make money in other countries, too. Leia's from Canada.
Yeah, we can make money in Canada, too.
Yeah, you save damsels. You save damsels and make money.
Indeed. The USA ain't that special. Sorry, guys.
We're not. Not at all. Angel is like, you guys go on ahead as they want to go deposit the money. He's like, I'll stay here and not burst into flames. Oh my gosh.
Angel had some like good lines this episode.
Some phenomenal lines. Like, so
who
good.
Who are you?
And as they're leaving, Cordelia's like, haha, Doyle, can I pump you for some more visions so we can make some more money? And Doyle's like, no, thank you. Those are painful. And also, that's not how this works at all. And Angel, I love that, like, the episode ends. He has a slight smile as he goes in and puts the plant on his desk where it's going to die, but he's happy. So I'm happy for him at the moment.
So it's like, there's not enough light in that spot.
There's not, and humidity, and oh my word, they work best in bathrooms.
No.
So
we know that he showers. He can create some steam from his very hot shower that he probably takes.
Perfect. So I'd like to believe that the plant lives happily ever after in Angel's shower. So there you go.
Oh my God, yes.
Leia's like, Angel.
Angel's the type of person that would be like, oh my God, this plant, I don't want it to die. And he would just turn his shower on hot the whole time and get like heat lamps in his bathroom. And
he
just
would,
like,
all for that one plant.
He's like, I'm going to sacrifice all of my money on bills for this one plant.
Because isn't she like the first person that he's actually been able to save? Like, this is the first client that he was actually able to do something good. And I think that cheered him up. And I think, again, that is another reason why this episode was also the one that they got paid and stuff too. But I think this episode gave Angel a little bit of hope. Like, he might actually be able to help people, you know? And that plant is a symbol of that, you know? So,
but it's gonna die.
Let's hope the plant doesn't die. But it did. Spoiler alert.
In episode 8,
probably. I'm gonna check and see if it's the Calathea. Anyway,
maybe it was a fake plant.
No, it's real. You can tell it's real. I'm so nerdy. We've spent the last 10 minutes talking about plants. I'm so sorry, everyone. I love plants so much. But anyway, okay. That is I Fall to Pieces. And you know what, Leia? You made that so much more enjoyable than when I was watching it by myself, because I was like, I don't like this episode. But yeah.
I agree. We had some good talks about it.
We did. And you know what? I think we were actually able to find the redeeming qualities of the episode. Hopefully we helped you listeners to be able to appreciate it a little bit more. I'm really excited for the next episode. We actually get to kind of focus on Cordelia, which I think I'm ready for us to do some like individual character-centric episodes. So that'll be really fun. Yes. So, all right, guys, as always, DM us. Let us know your thoughts on this episode. Let us know what you thought about the parallels between Angelus and Ronald, what you thought about Kate coming back.
And if you think the plant is going to die.
If you think the plant is going to die, and if you think that Angel should charge people, because I'm curious about your answers for all those things. But yeah.
I am against it 100%. I just can't get on board with it. I'm sorry.
I feel like I'm torn.
It makes me really uncomfy that they want to charge people.
Yeah. Well, I guess we'll have to see if it gets any better for the gang and for Angel and stuff. But we hope you guys enjoyed this, and we will see you all next time. Thanks so much for listening to Investigating Angel. If you enjoyed this podcast, feel free to follow, subscribe, and review us on all platforms. You can also find us on Instagram at Investigating Angel Podcast, and you can email us at investigatingangelpodcast@gmail.com.